Hello and welcome to another episode of Video Game Logic. Today's episode was recorded on April the 16th, 2024. I'm your host, gaming psychologist, and with me, as always, my partner in crime,
Caffeine Rage.
On today's show, we will, of course, discuss a couple of games that we have played this past week. A former Blizzard president thinks tipping game creators is a splendid idea. Ubisoft is deleting the crew from Players Library, is reminding us that we own nothing. And in the community corner, Amazon makes Fallout 3 and New Vegas free-to-play in the worst way possible. Timestamps will be in the show notes following their respective topics. Hello, Rage.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm here, I think.
Agreed. That is more or less how I feel at this moment. As the first yawn of the evening comes out of my mouth.
So shall we just launch right into it then?
Sure. Absolutely.
So speaking of crack.
Go on.
Sarah picked this game up off the side of the road.
Right. The Frankenet content we recorded for this, whenever it shows up, there's a story about drugs. There's a story about death.
Unrelated.
There's a story about stupidity.
Semi-related.
So, yeah, somewhat related, but it's an interesting one.
So anyway, getting back to crack.
Of course.
I jumped on the bandwagon and played Baltaro. And I've been playing it on and off for the last few weeks now. I have, according to this, 10 hours and some change, which is not quite correct because I've also played it offline with my Steam Deck. So, yeah, your mileage may vary, right?
Of course.
Baltaro is a deck-building roguelite using poker hands. So, this game made the rounds on the news shortly after its release back in February. Because it, quote-unquote, promoted gambling because poker, right?
Right.
Which, technically, I guess, but you're not using real money. It's, you know, it's like having a slot machine in a video game, right? Is that simulated gambling, or is it just, you know, a slot machine, right?
Right.
So I'm not going to get into the debate on that one, because honestly, I think it's dumb, because, you know, we allow gambling with loot boxes. Why not just have a poker roguelite and be done with it, right?
Yeah.
So, Baltaro, which I have no idea if I'm pronouncing it correctly, and frankly I don't care because it's late, is a deck builder where you start with a deck of 52 playing cards, and you're going up against, there's not really even a story as far as I could tell. It's just, you know, you're playing against opponents, doing small blinds, big blinds, and then having a boss, and you go through 8 tables, and then you win the run. And each hand is up to 5 cards. You don't have to actually play a 5-card hand. So if you just want to play a high card, you know, you just put out 1 card to essentially get rid of it. And it goes through the hierarchy of poker. So, you know, a high card is about the worst hand that you can put out, followed by a pair, then, you know, and so on. And each successfully higher hand gives more chips and a better multiplier to be able to make the blind or the boss's blind to pass around to go on. However, things get a little bit different because, remember, I said this is a deck builder. So after every round, every blind or whatever, you go to a shop where you can buy packs of cards to add to your deck. You buy tarot cards, which have various effects from giving various playing cards different effects, like having it where, you know, suddenly the Queen of Hearts is a slut and now she is all the suits. So you still have 52 cards, but you have a queen card that goes all goes any way that you want, right?
Right.
You can get a card that has a additional multiplier on itself, so whenever it scores, it builds up the multiplier faster. And then you get into the Jokers. The Jokers are a special case where they are not technically part of the deck. They are modifiers to the deck. And there's very mundane ones like just, you know, it gives a like 4 or 6 multiplier. Yeah, just on the top of everything, right? To game-changing and game-breaking ones. Like every time that you play a particular hand type, it gets a +1 multiplier. So if you start hitting, like, you know, 2 pairs over and over and over again, it's going to keep building and building and building. There's jokers that will make it so that a flush or a straight only needs 4 cards instead of 5. So it makes it a lot easier to build. There's jokers that go off certain suits. There's ones that will go has a very strong multiplier, but has a very odd triggering. Like one that will only trigger off scored 10s or 4s. And based on what jokers you get, you start crafting your deck around them to try to win the run. It is highly addicting. Like I said, crack. But it's also one of those games that you can pick up and play for a short time and put down. Or one that you could just, you know, play run and run after run after run and have, you know, see what where things go. It is a very fascinating take on the deck builder.
Right. I've heard good things about this. I don't think I have any questions, but other than, like, do you like it? But I would imagine, given everything that you said,
I do really like it. And they are having a significant balancing patch to make take some of the randomness out of it so that a strategy has more to play, more play on it. Like, there's planet cards that also buff up certain hands. So, on the upcoming patch, the Saturn planetary card will give a +3 multiplier instead of a +2 multiplier to straights, as a small example of that. So, if you get Saturn, it makes it easier if you could get straights, and there's a randomness about it because, you know, it is poker, but it's all about playing the odds and also figure out which jokers that you want and which ones that work into your playstyle. I've only really beaten the game a couple times, and as you progress through the game, you start unlocking more and more decks. So, like, the first one that, or the first, like, odd deck that I unlocked, starts you with a hex card, which makes it so that the that when you use it, it's a consumable. It makes it so that the one of your random jokers will gain, I think it's polyfoil, a foil, and I'm trying to remember the other one. There's like 3 or 4 different effects that I could have, but it also destroys all the other jokers. So it comes up to, do you want to use it on a bad joker and see if you could get a good addition? Right. And every card has additions that you could have for it. So, like, you know, wild cards, multiplier cards, lucky cards, so that there's a chance that will give you a lot of money, but it's like 1 in 5 and a 1 in 20 chance. Then there's seals that, if you discard the card for one type of seal, it gives you a tarot card, which can have different effects. Or if you're holding it in your hand at the end of the round, you gain a certain card, or it gives you a bonus whenever you score with it. You know, that sort of thing. And it has a very, like I said, it makes you sit and pause and think about it.
Gotcha.
It's very. I've been using the term addicting quite a bit in crack, and you get going on, and it's like suddenly a couple hours later, if you're not careful.
Just one more.
And also, runs are fairly fast, especially if you're unlucky, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, I started playing Halo with my kid, which has been fun.
Does he want to learn poker?
Not yet. I'm sure he will at some point. I'll teach him. But, no, we started playing Halo. He had his 10th birthday. And comes along with that, you know, he can do a few more things. He gets a few more chores and responsibilities. But Halo is one of the things. And we started playing.
It is a chore, right?
Yep.
Or is there a responsibility?
It's a responsibility, really. So, I am a huge fan of the Halo universe, and there's a ton of stuff that I have not kept up with. Because just, you know, life and time. But I'm a big fan of the universe. Read the books. I had read them all at one point. Played the games. I played them multiple times. Single player and co-op and stuff. You and I started playing Reach at one point a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And we never finished.
Yeah, we got to like a pivotal cutscene and got through it. It's like, it's not as impactful knowing that it happens now.
Yeah. So,
because, yeah, the big spoiler on everything is, yeah, way out in like the gaming zeitgeist, you know?
Yeah. So, anyways, so King wanted to play through them in chronological order as opposed to release order. So we actually started with Halo Reach. And then we beat Halo Reach, and now we're playing Halo Combat Evolved, which is Halo 1. Boy, howdy. It's interesting to look at a game that was released like something like 15 years after the original, and how the series has evolved and gaming in general has evolved. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I've been looking at while I'm playing and being like, huh, interesting. Like, Halo 1 is, you know, Halo 1 came out in like 2002 or something like that. So the game is over 20 years old now. And a lot of old first-person shooter game design is extremely present, despite me thinking of Halo, the series, more defined by its last couple of games being like Infinite and Halo 5. Like, Halo 1 is very much, I mean, it, you know, Bungie made Marathon, which was a first-person shooter primarily directed at the Mac, but then, you know, it became available on everything. And a lot of that old-school shooter level design and thinking comes through. There's a lot of backtracking, but it's not bad. Like, whenever you backtrack through a level, it's always after there's been some kind of change. So, and that, I think, also has to come from, like, a design ethos of, like, we have limited time, we have limited space, we have limited computing power. How can we make the most out of every single one of these levels? Because, aside from the first two, three levels, every level that you play either sort of wraps back around itself in some way, or you run it forwards, and then you run it backwards. And that's just interesting. Like it's something that I don't think many people think about anymore, between the fact that game sizes have ballooned, but those limitations are much, much less than they used to be. So unless you want to, unless you're trying to design something specifically that reflects that, and that era of gaming, it's just like, no, we'll just make a bespoke level for everything. And sometimes it feels good to backtrack and come back through and see changes made, positive or negative. Like, it makes, at least within Halo's case, it makes it feel like it's a little bit more of an interesting and interactive story than it actually is. So that's been interesting. To watch the evolution of, like, weapons and things in the series has been interesting. My kid, whose only experience with Halo prior to this was, like, YouTube videos and shorts and things. The ideas that he had about the games and issues as he's run up to, like, nothing like crazy bad, but it's like, He plays a lot of video games, and Halo doesn't play like this is his first like first person shooter, and so Halo doesn't play very much like other games that he's played. So he'll have expectations of a certain button doing a certain thing or a certain weapon being able to act this way. Because like, well, you said, Dad, it was like this other thing in this other game that I've played, a little different, but something like that. And so to watch him like deal with those things is interesting. And the stories of Halo, like Halo Reach, you know, I guess minor to major spoilers for the thing that's like what Halo Reach is known for anyway. So I guess maybe spoilers, but you know, and Halo Reach in the universe timeline is like the humans fail. For some reason, I guess I've been talking about Halo for forever. Like if you somehow have managed to miss what Halo is, it's a first person shooter originally developed by Bungie in the early 2000s, where you play as a space marine known as the Master Chief and his artificial intelligence sidekick known as Cortana, and you go on cool adventures to fight the alien bad guys. So, within the universe timeline, Halo Reach is a prequel, and humans lost. The humans lost at Reach. And so, they changed some canon, like, they changed some stuff from the books, although in the case of a video game series, the video game is, like, the primary source of canon. That is, you know, if there is ever a conflict, what the game says is true. In this
for
case.
Me, pirate ships are my main source of canon.
Ayo. But, so they changed some stuff in the Halo Reach game, but the general gist of it is the same. The Covenant shows up, the humans are unprepared, they fight to the last man, but it's just not enough. And so you start the game with a squad, like you're part of a squad of Spartans, the soldiers, and you end the game with everybody dead, including you. Because that's the point of the story, is like you're trying to accomplish one mission against all odds, and your efforts are not enough. And you're able to like do one thing, but you can't save yourself and you can't save the planet. And watching my kid experience that storytelling trope for the first time ever was wild. Because even when I played Halo Reach for the first time, I was a teenager, a young adult. I don't remember exactly when it came out, but like I was older, you know, a little bit older at that point. And so this was not new storytelling ground to cover for me. But for him, he's never seen, like he's seen and watched and read plenty of things, you know, bits of literature and things that I would think of as like somewhat more adult or more serious, you know, storytelling and filmmaking and kind of stuff. But this is his first experience with this. And so every time someone dies, he like has like he's real sad. He's like, "Oh, but I like that character. Why did he have to die? Why couldn't we save him? We could have saved
because
him."
Because it's the fucking cutscene.
Yeah, it's like, well, I mean, but it's like that's the point of the story. One, it's the cutscene, and two, it's part of the story. Like that's the point. You can't save them.
Yeah, I don't care how many Phoenix Downs you have. Aerith is coming back.
And then playing the original Halo.
Final Fantasy VII would be a fun one for him.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. The OG.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea what they're doing with the remake and its sequels now. They're too really spread care. Out for me to even give a shit.
Yeah, I don't really care. Somebody in my tabletop group mentioned it to me, and I was like, I don't really care. I was like, I just... And like I had my whole thing about how I think Final Fantasy VII is overrated anyways, mm-hmm. and I'm not interested in a remake or a remaster that I think makes the game worse, because I like the traditional JRPG combat, but like, you know, more power to the people who like it. And they were like, "Oh, it's really different. They changed a whole bunch of stuff." And I'm like, I don't care. I'm not interested. But anyways,
it's intriguing that they took the term remake and put it on its head, as in a story remake, but it's not what I wanted. Final Fantasy VII has been revisited way too much.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, like doing this with him has just been interesting to see him go through those moments in game design and development and like these milestones and things that like were, you know, kind of pivotal or important moments to me and my childhood gaming experience. Watching my 10-year-old get freaked out at the flood. Like, yes, they are indeed scary, aren't they? It's like, you know, we're going down, and Again, they're playing this. So in the original Halo, the level where you meet the Flood, which if you don't know what the Flood is, they're like zombie aliens. That's the quickest way to explain them. They're kind of like zombies. And
lots of them.
And there are lots of them. And that's kind of like why they're called the Flood, because it is like a flood of these, you know, never-ending flood of these creatures that whenever they kill something, you know, they consume it and warp it, and it becomes a new thing.
Replicators from Stargate.
Yeah. And so playing this as an adult and someone with a lot more interest in sort of game design philosophy now and storytelling tropes and like going through the level and seeing like, oh, actually they like did set this up really well. It's like there are turrets pointed inwards instead of outwards and barricades. And there's a few obvious things like the dead bodies or the guy who's like having a massive panic attack and tries to kill you when you come through the door, like the human soldier. But like, seeing all of that, my kid was like, oh, this is weird. Okay, whatever. Like, oh, that guy, like, why did he try to shoot us? Isn't he a human? Why did you kill him, Dad? What are you doing? It's like, oh, buddy. Just let's keep going. Come on. And then the music plays and you get those really long cutscenes showing the Sergeant Johnson and the Marines and how they all get like killed by the Flood, and then the music ramps up and the door bursts open and my kid is like, what's that? What is that?
Your nightmares for the next 2 weeks, kid.
I'm like, you haven't even seen anything yet. The little guys aren't even that bad. So it's been really good, and I have enjoyed this experience thoroughly. And on top of that, it's just interesting to see the different, you know, to kind of revisit these old game design elements. In the Master Chief Collection specifically, they did remasters of Halo 1 for its anniversary, and then later for Halo 2. And in the game, if you're playing on PC, it's tab, and if you're playing on using a controller, it's the back button, or the select button, whatever. And it will transition between the old graphical style and the new one. And I've been doing that a lot, going through the game, just like looking at something and kind of transitioning back and forth to see what they changed. And sometimes the older graphics and older sort of lighting and shading is more effective than the newer stuff. My kid hates it. He's like, oh, this is really ugly, Dad. It's like so bland. I'm like, well, it was beautiful and amazing back in the day, kid. Like, at some point, I want to do like a kind of a retrospective and start with early gaming.
Oh, God. And
move forward in time just to give him little snippets of games. I think that would be really interesting.
You need a CRT for it, but I so want to see your kid with a light gun game. You're like, Duck Hunt.
Yeah, so.
He would be so upset about Duck Hunt. It'd be delicious.
Yeah. We're planning on playing the entirety of the Halo series. The Master Chief Collection goes all the way to Halo 4. And then, you know what? I haven't looked. I've just assumed that Halo 5 is on Game Pass like Halo Infinite is. Let's look. But like, the goal is to play the entire series, at least the first-person shooter games. Halo 5 or Halo Infinite included with Game Pass. Halo 5. Ooh. Is it not on PC?
No,
it's not.
Well, that's going to throw a wrench into things.
Yeah.
Closest you could get is Xbox Cloud Gaming.
Hooray.
Or go down to Goodwill and try to find an Xbox One.
I've got an Xbox One.
Oh, well, there you go.
I have an OG Xbox One from like 2013 or 2014, whatever they released. Like, I've got one. It's still kicking. I've taken it apart a couple times, cleaned out the dust, replaced the thermal paste in it once. Still kicking.
Yeah, I'm like, Red Ring of Death, right?
Yeah, but, well, at the rate we're going, I'll need to figure this out in the next few weeks. And summer's coming up, so we will have longer game sessions. We shoot through Halo Reach and the original, like, we're near the end of the original Halo. We've got, like, two missions left. And we did that over the course of, like, three play sessions within 2 days. but it's like limited to like Saturday, Sunday, because school, like we just don't have the time with school because, you know, homework and all that jazz. So, but I mean, at this rate, we've got, you know, I've got maybe a month tops. Guess I got to figure that out. Oh, well. Yeah. Anyways, that's what I played this week. I'm sure I'll have more to say about Halo as time comes along, but really it was just an excuse to talk about some game design stuff and for me to be happy about getting to play one of the defining like video game series of my childhood with my son. That's pretty cool. I'm happy about that.
Thank you, oh. Ludo.
Yay.
Or have you watched Design Delph?
I have not.
I think you'll love Design Delph. It's on Second Wind.
Okay.
It's a game designer talking about just game design stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The baffling decisions of Dragon's Dogma 2 was Dark Souls Blighttown a mistake? The secret to making any game satisfying? What developers misunderstood about Dark Souls level design?
Okay.
Designing an underwater temple that doesn't suck? And they and the video plays it like, you know, digging down into a mine of game design. And Ludo is his dog.
Which is, that's cute. That's cute. Because, you know, ludology is, well, yeah. Ludo is play. And then ludology is sort of the idea of, like, gameplay mechanics, like the study of that. Ludonarrative, how gameplay can tell a story. Uh-huh. So that's cute. I like that the dog is named Ludo.
And his dog is actually named Ludo.
Ah, it's so loud. I just clicked on a video that, and it pulled up the playlist.
Huh.
But, it, you know, it started auto-playing, so it's very loud. Mm. Yeah.
That damn YouTube sucks. It just got stuck loading. Because I was going to link you a video, but I have a feeling you already found them.
Yeah, there's a playlist with 16 videos here from Second Wind.
Yeah.
Which you said that was them, so.
Yeah. Looter Shooter devs still don't understand loot from 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And of course. Huh?
I was going to say, like, I'm... One of the things that I watched recently was... a discussion about like gameplay mechanics and like loot was one of them, and it's like, don't nerf loot if you can help it. Like, just don't in general, don't nerf things, make other things better, because if there's a meta that evolves around something being like a better thing, well, making it worse just makes the gameplay experience worse. If you make other things better, then it opens up more options, as opposed to restricting the one good thing, so you have to try to figure something else out. So don't nerf things.
Yeah, but your homework is to go check out Design Delph. And of course, there's also Fully Rimlambiatic, but that's Yahtzee, so...
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I told you in our pre-recording discussion, like, I have two single-player games that, like, need some background noise that I'm starting to get into.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on how watchable versus listenable, like, I don't think I can watch.
It's still very listenable.
Yeah. I couldn't watch this while I played Ravenfield. I could listen to it, but I could definitely watch it while playing Dyson Sphere Program.
Yeah. Games are so pretty, it's ruining my job. It's a fun one.
Yeah. So, okay. I got homework. I'll do my homework, teacher sir, and I'll turn it in for a good grade. For our change gears and dive into our news topics, for the first one of the night, mixed feelings about pretty much all of these. Former Blizzard president thinks tipping game creators is a splendid idea. Like, listen, on its face, that statement, sure. I think that applies to anything. If you want to tip the creator of something or someone who does like a really good job and you like appreciate the service or appreciate the whatever, like, by all means, absolutely. Tip a game creator, especially those who are indie developers or work on like really small teams. You know, I yeah, support... Yeah, but not
Megacorp.
No, not Megacorp. Blizzard can go get fucked. Because what's going to happen, right? You know it. I know it. Everyone listening here knows it, I believe, is that they'll float the idea. They'll, you know, start making it like commonplace to think about people doing this. And then they'll just start slipping in like a tip button, you know, like an option. If it's like, hey, you know, you like the creators, you like this DLC, like give them a tip, throw them an extra $5 or whatever. And then they will, of course, take some off of the top before they even think about passing any of it along to developers or teams or whatever.
That's, of course, assuming that the developers and teams would even see any of it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Or they would do what restaurants would do and make it part of their, at least restaurants in the United States, and make it part of their compensation.
Yeah, all great. Developers are suddenly going to get, you know, waitress wages of $2.75 an hour and then get bumped up to minimum wage if the tips don't cover it. Great idea.
Yep. And in case you didn't know that, dear listener, whether you live in the United States or not, that's how it works in the United States.
Yeah, I might be a slightly off on my number, but it's an embarrassing low wage, and tips are plus that. But if it doesn't come up to the federal minimum wage, it has to be covered.
Yep. And of course, restaurants try all the time to not cover it anyways, because of course they do.
So, yeah. I mean, like you said, I don't have a problem with it whenever it's indie devs or very small teams. Or even just throw out a DLC, you know? Like the Golden Hat DLC or something. Because I know that there's a fair number of just small games on Steam that does this. Where it's the, it's the donation DLC where it's, a few bucks, maybe $5. And it's just, basically like buying the game again. Or, buying a portion of the game again to show your appreciation. And you might get, like, a wallpaper or, some sort of minor skin in the game.
Yeah.
But whenever we're talking about, megacorps, I draw the line, you know?
Yep.
There's a difference between, going to, like, a corporate fast food place, you're not expected to tip, but at a sit down mom and pop restaurant, right?
Yeah,
that's kind of my distinction as well. Where if the place has stock options,
yeah, they don't need your tip money. They don't need to skim your tip money away from their employees.
And I'm just cynical enough to think that even if it does become the thing, it's not going to make it to the developers or the development teams. Or if it does, it's going to be a minuscule portion.
Yeah. I'm with you. But, support creators that make things that you like. Feel free to tip creators that you do specifically enjoy. Just double check, do your due diligence, make sure that
Or if you want to tip a creator, buy their game again on a different platform, or buy a copy and give it to a friend.
Yeah. I mean, I bought Stardew Valley 3 or 4 times at this point.
I was about to say, Stardew Valley I have on Switch and Steam.
Yeah, I have it on Switch, Steam, and Xbox.
I only really play it on computer, but, I have it.
Yep. And then there are developers that I support. I mean, there's a couple of mod creators that I support their Patreon or have donated to, like, if they have a PayPal that they put out for people to send them money or whatever. For the Battletech mod, the big one that I use, Battletech Advanced, I've donated or given them, the developer, $40. Just because it's like, hey man, I've gotten thousands of hours of enjoyment out of this. Like, let me give you some money. You did good. I should give him some more money, even though I haven't played since like March or February. Should still give him some money. But anyways, like, absolutely support people, support individuals. Don't tip companies.
Mm-hmm. Tip teams at best, not companies.
Yeah.
Keep the suits out of the tip jar.
That's right. So, all right. Our second news topic of the night. Ubisoft is deleting the crew from players' libraries, reminding us we own nothing.
Boy, Ubisoft does love pissing gamers off, huh?
Indeed.
Which, it just makes more... It gives more ammunition for the whole Stop Killing Games website.
Yeah.
Although, I think I understand their reasoning for it. It's because part of the Stop Killing Games campaign, I did eventually watch the video, was that you have essentially a bigger case if you're an owner of the crew. Well, guess what? Suddenly you're not an owner of the crew, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing just how bad Ubisoft is at their own PR, because damn. not even PR, but just gamers' trust, because yeah, I already have very limited trust with Ubisoft over live service games, because yeah, they tend to pull the rug out from under them pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Which, I know, The Crew was a fairly old game by Ubisoft standards, but you know, The Crew still had a significant single-player amount of content that, you know, is just inaccessible now. And now really inaccessible because they're pulling it from people's libraries. That makes me not want to buy any game from Ubisoft, ever.
Yep, there's a good chance I will never buy another Ubisoft game.
Although, I think my entire... it's Ubisoft Connect, sorry. I forget which shitty... A third-party launcher belongs to which company sometimes. I think a good portion, if not everything I have on there, is either giveaways or just, like, Humble Bundle.
Yeah. I mean, I think the last thing I bought from Ubisoft was the Division 2. Back during the COVID times. Or the major COVID times, whatever.
I think the last thing I bought Ubisoft was Mario vs. Rabbids, a used copy of it.
Yeah. So they didn't get any of that.
Nope. They didn't get any of my $10.
Yeah. I
think it was 10 or maybe 15 or something like that. Still, didn't get any of it. Fuck you.
And I've got, like, nothing to say about this in terms of, like, I mean, I've got a lot to say as an angry rant, but I'm not surprised.
Just disappointed.
I'm extremely disappointed, because like Ubisoft has a long history of sucking. So this is just another thing.
Also forcing sucking.
Yes. With all the sex crimes they've committed. But, I lost my train of thought. What was I? Where were you going?
Ubisoft has a long history of this?
Yeah, Ubisoft has a long history of this. And it is one of the few downsides to having digital games. With no physical copy, which, I mean, I know that the game does have physical copies, but, like, in my instance, like, I don't have a physical copy. Yeah, but, you know, they've, like, now that it's just poofed out of existence, then you have nothing you can do. You have a, you know, just useless. Unless the game, you know, garners a certain type of support to, I was going to say mod around it, but that's probably not quite the right way to say it, but... You know, to get the game running again. Which people have done for a few games. I doubt The Crew is going to be one of them, but that has happened before.
I mean, Lawbreakers just got it. That popped up in the news like in the last few hours that Lawbreakers essentially has risen from the dead as a fan-modded servers.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
They got that going for them, which is nice.
Which is nice. I suppose. So moving on to our last news topic of the night. This one comes to us from our community corner. Amazon makes Fallout 3 and New Vegas free to play in the worst way possible. They're streaming only from Amazon's service. Luna, is that right? Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're cloud gaming service. It's dumb. Like, I guess I kind of get it. But
it's a promotion for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've tried Luna a couple times with since I have Prime Gaming, and it's never worked very well. And it's, Fallout might be slow enough where it would actually work, but it would still be unpleasant with the lag. I know
that's
true. It's just, unless you're in a major metropolitan area, cloud gaming just doesn't work in the United States.
Yeah.
With the exception of slower paced games. You know, is that the turn based something slower? You know, it's all right. I've done a little bit of Crimson Skies, the sequel, on Xbox game streaming through Game Pass Ultimate because I cashed in some reward points. And it's okay, but the thing is that I got put off of it because I was partway through, you know, most of the way through a mission, and the internet dropped and kicked me out. And, you know, I get to replay that. Joy.
Yay. Have, shoot. Oh, the Fallout TV show. Have you seen any of that?
Not yet.
Me either. I want to watch it. I just haven't had a chance. Unless it sucks, in which case I won't be watching it any farther once I determine it sucks, if it does.
I've heard a lot of people talking about it. It breaks the canon of Fallout. Well, so did Fallout 76.
And I mean, so did like Fallout 3 when it passed to Bethesda and they changed a bunch of stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I had a really long conversation with somebody the other day about that. Like, and maybe it was the Fallout specifically. I don't know, they were like, yeah, this broke canon on something. It makes me upset. And I'm like, I mean, I guess you're allowed to that, but like, it didn't take away from the stuff that you love. It didn't take away from the other things. Like, I'm too old for that shit now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the thing as well, is there's, I don't know exactly what they changed, all right? There's things like playing with, like, dates. Because I think that was the big thing in Fallout 76, is that it basically messed with some of the dates for the expansion of the Brotherhood of Steel, or something like that, something along those lines.
Yeah.
Which could also, you could go back and say, well, it's unreliable narrator, and, you know, kind of retcon it, you know?
Yeah.
Or if it's something, you know, you're very, very major that they retcon, you know. Yeah, major timeline events, that's completely different, you know?
Yeah. I always tell people the old thing that you liked so much still exists. The existence of a new thing doesn't take away from the old thing. I mean, I guess if you let the new thing exert power over the old thing so that it ruins it in your mind, I guess, yeah, sure, you're allowed to do that. But something new coming along doesn't get rid of the older thing. And that's the conversation I usually have with people. It's like, sure, they messed with something. Movies and shows and books and, like, you know, they all change stuff to work better with the format that they're in. Or the, you know, the creator of it has got like a little pet project or something going on. Like, whatever, you know? Just as long as the main thing is good, that stuff doesn't matter all that much. But I am interested in watching it. I just haven't had a chance yet.
Of course, we are ignoring the fact that we have no idea of what they changed, you know?
Nah. I'm confident in my statement that my statement will hold true no matter what it is that they've changed. Whether it's good, whether it's bad, it doesn't take away from the old things that I have enjoyed.
Woo?
Woo. A lot of this became about the new Fallout show.
I mean, that's kind of the resurgence of Fallout right now. Is because of the Fallout show being supposedly at least, you know, good.
Good enough.
Yeah, good enough. That's kind of the thing.
Which, hey, more power to them. Good job, guys. But it did not pique my interest to play another Fallout game. At least not right now.
I mean, we already played the best one.
Indeed we did. Indeed we did. Mwah. Love you, New Vegas.
Hey, here's an idea. Let's get another game like New Vegas. Forget Fallout 5, you know?
Right.
Or, yeah, Fallout, you know, 247 or whatever the fuck they're going to call it now, since, you know, we've broken numbering conventions.
Yeah.
They've gone full Microsoft. They went full Microsoft before the acquisition.
Get the next vault number. Let's go to Vault 69.
Oh, you really want to go to the Vault 69?
Absolutely. Surely Fallout, like Vault 69 is something on the Fallout Wiki. Surely.
Yeah, it is. So now the question is listed in vaults. Unfortunately, 69 isn't known. 75, social and medical experiment in which a eugenics program was used to breed young inhabitants into perfect soldiers. Appears in Fallout 4. And let's see, in Fallout 76, it has Vault 51. Social experiment, ZAX AI was tasked with selecting the ideal overseer. It became manufacturing crises to test the abilities of inhabitants. The crises eventually escalated to lethal threats and then direct manipulation, encouraging the remaining inhabitants to kill one another. So fun, right?
So the last man standing was the...
Yeah, congratulations. You get the desk.
You're the overseer. Good job.
Oh, okay, sorry. Correction. Vault 69 does appear in the literature. 1,000 people entered. There was only one man.
Oh.
Vault 68. 1,000 people entered. There was only one woman.
Both of those situations sound awful. Like, I think, obviously the idea is like, oh, you're the last man on Earth with 1,000 women. But, like, that just sounds awful. You get into, like, it's just too much. Just too much. That scenario is not going to go the way that you think it was going to go.
I mean, it'll be nice for a while, but...
You are not going to be made king of the castle. You are not going to be given, 1,000 women to have sex with.
If anything, you're going to be locked up and used... I mean, let's be perfectly honest here. Let's see, some more interesting ones from supplementary material. Vault 70. Social experiment in which the jumpsuit extruders would fail after 6 months, drastically reducing the clothing availability. Vault 77. Social experiment in which a single person inhabited the vault alone with a crate of puppets.
Doesn't that show up in one of the games?
That shows up as a Penny Arcade.
Okay.
But it was made canon. Let's see. Vault 84. Every year, a vote is held to exile a dweller deemed the most dangerous to the vault.
What an interesting little rabbit hole we've gone off on.
Yeah.
But...
I'm pretty sure there's a rabbit hole vault somewhere in here.
Probably. But let's bring it back around. And, Rage, you can tell people how they can get in contact with us.
Well, if you wish to contact us, you can do so by emailing us, vglpodcast@gmail.com. Tweet us VGL Podcast on the Twitter. Yes, we still use that. And yes, we still dead name it because, we're terrible like that.
Everyone does.
Mm-hmm. Or you can just hop on the Discord, which you can find a link to that over at vglpodcast.podbean.com. It's right there at the top. At least last time I checked. Woo?
Scrolling through things. All right. Do you want to give them your specific socials, Rage?
Well, see, I'm a social outcast. I'm just sitting there glaring at people. You could contact me, CR on Twitter, or you could be my friend on Steam, Caffeine Rage, but I make no promises.
Yeah, right. You can find me on Twitter at JMA4707. Same thing on Blue Sky. Come talk to me on the Discord. You can be my friend on Steam if you want to, Jarrether4707. Everybody still calls it Twitter. For, I think, the main, there's been a whole bunch of things that have been said, but, Twitter became known as a thing. People will say, go get me a Band-Aid, when they're talking about just, a bandage with, sticky, two sticky ends. People will say, get me a Kleenex, when they just mean a tissue. And Twitter had established that level of, brand... "quote unquote recognition and strength," it was a thing. People would talk about, people would just talk about it and refer to it as a verb, how Google, Google that, as opposed to search that. It's
becoming a genericized.
Yeah. Twitter had like reached that level, and rather than trying to do something to try to capitalize on that or whatever, dipshit Musk is like, no, I have this fascination with the letter X, and so I'm just going to rename this X, which is, in general, a bad rebrand. Like, this is just bad.
But you take away X three times.
But you take that level of like brand recognition and genericization and throw that all away for a letter obsession. But I mean, that's the kind of person that he is. Dumb and shallow. But anyways, I digress. Socials. What are you supposed to say next? What do you do next? Do what you do next. I believe in you.
Well, I'll scroll back up to the top and talk about how, once again, they could contact us, featurepodcast@gmail.com, with your letters, voicemails, game-related topics. Tweet them to us, featurepodcast, or drop by the Discord, which you can find a link to that over at vgpodcast.podbean.com, which is paid for by our lovely patrons, which you can find out more about that over at patreon.com/vgpodcast. Our intro and outro music is On the Ground by Kim McLeod. You can find his work over at incompetech.com, and...
as always, as this lovely music starts to roll across my voice, bye-bye now.
See ya.
Bye-bye.